Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch, as you always are, Friday, 11 in the morning, Pacific Standard Time, here in beautiful Los Angeles, where the hills used to be ablaze a couple of days ago. Everything's under containment now, thank God, since the winds have died down here in Southern California, and Northern California as well. But wherever you're listening around the world, we're cool here. Our studios are up, running, and safe. So, welcome everybody. As always, a great show today on the couch. And you've always heard me, you know, talk to people about coping with grief, about how to understand what their feeling is and what they've been going through. And you've also heard my special guest. Oh, gosh, she was on the show almost a year ago, it seems like. But she's written another book, back by popular demand, because this is an updated version of her last book. You may have heard me talk about Becoming Starlight. Well, Dr. Sharon Prentice has part two that's available for you to receive and get more information about, because as she goes on her journey, she becomes more enlightened about what happens when other people and we go to the other side or pass away. What's going on? And this is really a lot of this, like I talk about, is based on the experience, but also there are some scientific experiments that have been going on for a really long time, and I talk about that too, exploring what's going on out there as we talk about the field in physics terms, and what really happens to us or our loved ones when we pass on. So basically, as you remember, if you can go back into the archives, just look for Becoming Starlight. The book was a shared death journey from darkness to light. It was about Dr. Prentice's journey with her partner and what happened to her? What did she experience when her partner passed? What was happening with her? And this book actually goes deeper. It's called Surviving Grief and Mending the Wounds of Loss. So in her book, Dr. Prentice is going to describe her death, her shared death experience that has some characteristics of the near-death experience, which you'll hear about. And yet the person going through it is not ill or injured. Rather, it occurs in connection with the passing of someone else. So as I mentioned, Dr. Prentice's experience was tied to the passing of her husband. And she talks about so many different experiences that she learned from it as well, and what she wants to share with you in your healing and how to understand this process. Because I'm telling you, everybody needs to know this information. Sharon is the real deal. She's not, you know, well, how can I say this? She's not a one of these Instagram people who, and I love Instagram, believe me. I have an amazing group of influencers who reach out to me. Let me just say that right now. But she knows her stuff, and she is a doctor, and she's been experiencing these things for a long time and finally decided to share all of this with you in her second book. So let's bring her up on the air right now live and say, hey, Sharon, how are you?
Hey, Michelle, how are you?
You sound so cool. You know, I know that we were scheduled a couple of weeks ago, and you had such, you couldn't talk. You were a froggy girl, but now you sound amazing. So
Still just a little hoarse, but some kind of virus just knocked me out.
Oh, boy.
It's just kind of hanging on, but, you know,
right.
You got to get up and keep going, right?
Well, there you go. And when you're more sensitive and like you are and open to feeling and working with and understanding people, sometimes we take these cooties on, you know? Right?
Oh, that's one of the biggest, that is the biggest problem with this.
Yeah.
My family's telling me all the time, will you please leave it at work?
Oh.
But that's kind of hard. It's so hard to do because I fall in love with my patients and they become my family, you know?
Oh,
so
that's right.
I carry it with me until
sure
I figure
you do.
Out what to do to help it. So, you know.
Gosh.
You got to put up with the cooties. So.
Well, you're right, sweetheart. That's true. I mean, you're one of the really good ones. I'm telling you. You are one of the good.
Well, thank you.
You are. A psychotherapist who really gets in there, digs in there, and really feels people and helps them work through their issues. So let's talk about your book, because then, of course, we'll talk more about how to help people, you know,
sure.
going through this process. And your second book you came out with, Becoming Starlight, Surviving Grief and Mending the Wounds of Loss. And I so enjoyed reading about your spiritual journey. And I want you to know how much I appreciate you sharing your stories, you know, of the loss of loved ones and how you coped with these experiences. So what was the intention? Why did you write this book and add to it, Becoming Starlight?
Well, actually... and by the way, I still appreciate you saying that you enjoyed reading the journey because me writing it, I didn't enjoy it because it was like I was reliving it all day by day by day. I mean, it took me, gosh, 6-7 months just to write the one chapter about my daughter's death.
Aww.
So it was really difficult. And I got to tell you, the reason I wrote Starlight in the first place really was two reasons. One, as I wrote in the dedication, that my husband and my daughter, no matter how short their lives were, they mattered. They mattered.
Oh my God.
And their lives and their deaths affected so many people. So that was really the main reason for a long time.
Sure.
And
sure.
then doing what I do, my patient profile is mostly terminally ill in their families.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
when I'm called in, it's usually once a terminal diagnosis has been made and people are just, the fear just permeates,
sure.
you know, everything. And so the last chapter is called Should I Be Afraid?
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote this book for all of them because the first thing I do when I'm called in, inevitably someone will say to me, Should I Be Afraid?
Mm.
And then the first thing I do is I go right to where they are, whether they're in their home, in bed, or whether they're in hospital, whatever, I just grab them up in my arms, and I know I'm not supposed to do that. I've been told by, you know, the administrators and, you know, hospice and hospital, oh, you can't do that. Yeah, well, whatever. Because that's what people need, and I just take them in my arms, and I say, let me tell you a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them my story.
Mm.
They have all said to me, could you please write this down so that when we are not together, you know, next week, next month, 10 years from now, I can go back and remember it all. So that's why Starlight was originally written. Now, the reason that this one is that Surviving Grief and Mending the Wounds of Loss, when I first wrote Starlight, I thought, okay, I know what community this is going to go into. It's going to go into, you know, the near-death community, shared death community, you know, people who have had these types of experiences. And actually, I was pretty wrong on that, Michelle. I really was, because the people who have reached out to me by the hundreds are people who have lost children, people who have lost not just spouses, but moms and dads and brothers and sisters and the things that they are looking for. And they're telling me their stories and we're sharing all of these things. And I realized that this book has hit the grief community and people looking for answers of how to survive this.
Absolutely. And it's beautiful. I love it.
Thank you.
You know, you're so welcome. You know, you and I share and used to and all that is working with people. Of course, the classic Kubler-Ross stages of grief that we kind
right.
of, and they're not necessarily, you know, in stage. I mean, they go, we go back and forth from depression to anxiety to anger, mm-hmm. frustration and bargaining and denial. And,
right.
You know, but with your book, when I'm working with people who are, you know, dealing with relatives, loved ones who are chronically ill and inevitably mm-hmm. going to be passing or have passed, I refer them to your book because it is something that you do have a lot of scientific research, something that is based on your true experiences, and you are the real deal. So I think becoming Starlight, this second one, as well as your first one, Surviving Grief and Mending the Wounds of Loss, just really explains it a lot better than those old classic versions of, well, here's what you're going to go through, and everyone grieves.
Yeah,
and all
I agree.
That. So, terrific stuff. So, what I always love to talk about, you know, authors' personal stories, and you're very candid about it in here, which I love. So, you talk about how it took a complete, you kind of took a complete fall from grace, and how
right.
yeah, you sort of had to get there, like they say, we always have to hit the bottom first before before we become awakened from the trauma and darkness. And you said
yeah.
that of course naturally it would find its way into your life from what you went through. So can you talk about your traumas and why
sure.
why did you fall from grace, and what did you do? What happened?
Well, I'll tell you, to be very blunt about it, I was the most pissed off person in the universe.
Yeah.
That's the only way
oh,
I
no
can
kidding.
Put it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The anger. When my daughter died, she died in my arms.
Oh, honey.
And I bargained and I begged and I pleaded and I, you name it, you know, with God, you can't do this. Take me instead. I mean, she's just a baby. And when I realized that she was going to die, the first
yes.
thing that hit me was he didn't hear me. Okay,
right.
And he is the generalized, you know, it's easy to talk
right,
about
right,
God
right.
when
sure.
you say he.
Right.
And then my second thought was, if you do exist, you are the most evil entity that has ever existed since the beginning of time.
Well,
and the rage
right.
that I felt, I set up, and this is, I mean, really comical when I
sure.
think about it now.
Yeah, yeah.
I set up this existential war
oh my
with
goodness.
With God and
yep.
with death. I was going to beat them at their own game. I mean, seriously, I think about it now and I laugh, you know?
right.
But
oh
I went
God.
Into this major control
yep.
where I thought
yep.
if I could control everything in the universe, then nothing was going to happen bad ever again. And the only way to do that was if I believed there was a God.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to beat him at his own game. I was going to control him. I know that sounds so silly, but that's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
And I fell.
Yeah.
I fell into the rage, and I tell people I was so surrounded in muck I couldn't even breathe.
Oh,
it got really bad.
Sure, sure.
Oh. Well, you know, I mean, there are so many people as I there's so many people
mm-hmm.
who have felt
mm-hmm.
the same thing and then felt guilty about it.
Well,
and
sure.
then, of course, to compound that rage.
Right.
My husband was getting sick.
Oh, my God.
And sicker and sicker and sicker. Mm. And I got more controlling and
sure.
more controlling and more controlling.
Mm.
And when he finally got his diagnosis, well, that just set me off
oh, yeah.
on this, this battle, not just with God, if he did exist. I denied it constantly,
sure,
which is
sure.
really kind of strange, too, because you set up a battle against something that you say doesn't exist, though
right.
obviously somewhere you believe.
Yes.
You know, you're in this circular thing, you
right.
know.
Right, exactly.
yeah, I hated him if he did exist, and I hated him if he didn't exist, and I hated me for, you know, going back and forth.
Yeah,
it
sure.
was just a just the trauma for me. I wasn't thinking, I wasn't feeling, I wasn't I was just basically existing because I was afraid for my own life at the same time, because I was just I had already lost my identity. I'd lost everything.
It wasn't
a fun time.
No, it wasn't. Oh my goodness. And a lot of people do. I mean, they curse God. Yeah. You know, he said, God, what are you doing? You know,
absolutely. Yeah. And you know, Michelle, we're told, oh, you can't get mad at God.
That's right.
You can't say anything bad. You're going to go straight to hell. I mean, this gets into another whole thing of heaven and hell and the whole conversation people are told, no, don't you be angry at God, which is the last thing that someone should be told when they're going through this.
Yes, exactly. It reminds me of that scene from Forrest Gump, where Lieutenant Dan is sitting up on the very highest mast of that boat that they own, that Bubba Gump shrimp boat, and he's lost his legs, and he wanted to die in the field, but Forrest saved his life, and he just had it. He was in pain, and he climbed up the top, and it's you know, lightning is striking him, and he said, "Come and get me, God! I'm done with you." You know, and we've
absolutely
all, right. That's
you know,
what
that's
I.
When the hurricane
gets, exactly.
You know, and you know, I say that about what happened to me when Steve died. Do you want to talk a little bit about that,
or I really want to go somewhere else? Because I think this is the story. You know, this is the story. Yeah. So,
Know, most people. Here's what I have found over the years of doing research on this. Everyone has had some type of experience. It's just a matter of degree, okay? Yeah. And a lot of people don't talk about it because they don't want others to look at them and go, okay, you know, funny farm time.
Right,
And so they don't talk about it. But when they know they're in a safe environment where they can actually talk and tell you the things that they believe, it's amazing how many people have had experiences. Now, the shared death experience is what I had.
Yes.
Shared death experience is almost exactly the same as a near-death experience, except the person having the experience is just, I say they're just invited along to witness the aftermath of physical death, because that's what it is.
Yes.
And, you know, people have asked me, why you? Why?
You're right.
Not everyone else. And, you know, Michelle, I have thought about that for years and years and years. And and I really think it was threefold. I think there were three reasons for this. One, because at the moment of my husband's death, I couldn't even breathe. I lost, how do I say this? I lost me. I lost absolutely everything. And I went through something that I called just a total surrender to everything that was, everything that had been, everything that will be. And at that moment in time, you've heard of primal scream therapy.
Oh,
I'm sure
God,
you have.
Yes.
You know, that's that scream that comes from the soul that no one but God can hear.
Yes.
And the noise that escaped from my body. The people in the room have told me about it, but to this day, I can't remember the noise, and I couldn't tell you what it sounded like if I tried.
Sure.
But I think at that moment, a couple of things happened. I think when Steve passed, and this is going to sound weird, but this is what I really think. I think he kind of said to God, you know what? Let's show her something. You know, let's give her, let's throw her a bone, because if we don't, you know, I mean, seriously, if we don't do something, I think Steve's love for me was so tremendous that he did. He asked God, okay. And at the same time, I think God had had enough of me. And so it was like, all right, I'm going to shut you up and I'm going to show you what's out here. And the third thing that I practice to this day is something that I call, and you can read all about this in all kinds of literature, is contemplative prayer or centering prayer, or, and here's what I think happened to me, there's something called sacred word.
I
think that noise that came out of my soul was my sacred word. And you know, sacred word brings you right to the presence of God. It takes you right there. So I think it was those three things all together.
Yes.
Sacred word, Steve loves me, and God saying, will you stop it already? So that's what I think happened.
Yeah, and also, Sharon, I think it also has a lot to do with that, in physics, that energy of letting go, giving up.
Yes.
It's not that you're giving up on the love. You're just, okay, I allow, I surrender, I scream, I'm just okay. This is it. I'm just allowing and I'm surrendering, and that is
I'm done.
That's a meditative state. That's meditation. Yep. Surrender.
Because it is.
You lose yourself.
Yes, and you know it's so funny. For months and months and months and months, we lived in the hospital for 6 months. Mm. That was the time when they didn't kick you out of the hospital because of insurance, okay?
Right, exactly.
And we lived there for 6 months, and I controlled. Or I thought I did, controlled everything. I told the doctors what to do. I told the nurses what to do. I told everybody what to do, because surrender to me would have meant surrendering to death, and there was no way on this planet that I was going to surrender my battle to, you know, change the universe. So surrender to me was failure, and I would have never, ever considered surrendering until that moment when I realized just who I was. It was this amazing awakening to, that's what this was. And I think those things together gave me this incredible blessing.
Yes.
You know, I am no special. I am no more special than anybody else in this world. Don't get me wrong when I say that.
Yep.
Why this happened to me, like I said, I think it was because God got sick and tired of listening to me cuss at him all the time.
Oh, you're so funny. That is you. That is so you. That's
you know, I mean, really, that's what I'm thinking. And people who are just amazingly spiritual, just amazing people have said to me, why you? I said, why not me? I don't know. that's the answer. Why not? You know? And so that's why I think that everything came together at just that point for me to be taken along to witness what in the world's out there.
We're going to talk about exactly what happened to you. By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. And I'm speaking with one of my favorite guests I've had on the show before, Dr. Sharon Prentice. She's come out with her second book, actually. It's part two of her original book, Becoming Starlight. But there are so many more details and insights in here. So you can get both and follow her journey and really understand what she's talking about. To have a foreword written by Raymond Moody, you got to have your stuff together, folks. Dr. MD, PhD, Raymond Moody, the guy. You know what I'm talking, life after life, reunions, glimpses of eternity. So you really did a beautiful job in this book. The book's called Becoming Starlight, Surviving Grief and Mending the Wounds of Loss, Dr. Sharon Prentice. And we're going to find out now a little bit more. Oh, by the way, I'm getting emails from straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. There are some questions coming in. I'm going to sort of have the assistant here kind of generalize some of the questions that are coming in.
Okay.
And then we can nail, we can nail some of these really good ones and perhaps get some answers to that. So how's that?
Sure.
We'll do that. So let's, without further ado, talk about what happened with your, as you call it, your shared death experience, or SDE, with your husband. And can you describe what that is, how it kind of differs from near-death experiences? And
in the near-death experience, the person having the experience is dying or has died and has come back from whatever this experience was. And with a person having the shared death experience, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with you, physically. You're just there.
Mm-hmm.
People describe the beginnings of things, of these experiences, differently. For me, that's why the book's called Becoming Starlight, because that's exactly what happened to me. When, at the moment of my husband's death, some things happened in that room.
Yes.
That kind of just shocked everybody. Our oncologist, I won't tell you the words he used, but he was so incredibly shocked And after my husband died, he went back to his office, and he actually just sat there and cried, and he took a week off to try and process what he had seen and what he had heard. But at the moment of my husband's death, he had rolled over, which was physically impossible, and he opened his eyes, which was also physically impossible. And I knelt down beside him. We were nose to nose, and I think the most profound statement I'd ever said in my life came out then. You ready for this? I said, what are you staring at? Can you even imagine? After all this time of trying to save his life and he's staring at me, you would think, you know, the words that would come out of your mouth would be so amazing. And I say to him, what are you staring at? I mean, seriously.
You talking to me?
And he's, I'm telling you, it was just, you know. But that was the first thing that came into my brain because I thought I'd won. I beat death. Okay? And he looked, he was staring at me, and he said, I just want to remember. And when he said that, I gasped in. You know how when something really shocks you, you go, you know, one of those?
Yes.
That's what I did. And at the same time, he breathed out, and I breathed in his breath. And to this day, I can feel it just traveling through my lungs. And I thought, I won, I won. I was ecstatic.
Oh, my God.
And then I opened my eyes, and I saw that his eyes had gone dark, and I knew that he had died. And at that moment, it was, I didn't even exist anymore. And I stood up, and I said, I stood up by a force that something powered me. That this was by no power of my own. And I noticed the stars, and the ceiling became mist, and the floor wasn't there anymore, even though I knew I was standing on it. And it was beyond bizarre. But I noticed the stars, and there were billions of them, Michelle, but I could see every one of them. Every one of them I could see distinctly. And yet, it was one great, big, massive star. And it was coming to get me. It was coming to collect me. And I got to tell you, I went in so willingly because I felt this presence. And this presence that was within the stars, I knew that presence. It felt like I was going home. I have described it as a long ago forgotten memory because I knew it. I knew I was safe there. And I went just, I just went right into it. And Steve was there.
Okay.
He was standing there right in front of me. And, you know, he was a big guy. He was, you know, 6'4", 200 pounds, big guy. But when he died, he didn't even weigh 99 pounds.
Light, enlightened.
But there he was standing in front of me, and he was healthy and gorgeous and eyes just shining. And I know this sounds like I'm describing, you know, this physical form. And I can't tell you whether it was a physical form or whether it was pure consciousness or what it was. But it was, it was him and it was me. And he was more him than he'd ever been, and I was more me than I had ever, ever been, even since. I was more me at that point in time than I have ever been since that experience.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
You know, and all the rage and the anger and the hatred and all of it, it was just gone. I didn't do anything to get rid of it. It was just taken from me, and I was just cocooned in. You know what I want to say, and this is what people get a little confused at. The love, the peace, the joy, all of those emotions were so heightened that it became almost numb. You know, I didn't have to do anything. I didn't have to feel anything. I didn't have to be anything. I just was, and it was just this beautiful numb. I know that sounds odd, but that's what it was.
Well, and I think when we have that numb experience, you know, in the higher levels of meditative situation, sometimes they describe it as that, and it's actually it's just you've let go completely of you and your ego, who you are,
and
you breathed in his essence when he breathed into you, and you took that in. You were shared. You were sharing that energy. You had right. I mean, that's the only.
I absolutely
yeah.
I absolutely agree, and I think I was given the shortcut. I know it doesn't sound like a shortcut, but, you know, I've studied a lot about the mystics, too, because I knew that what had happened was just this, you know, totally off-the-wall thing. And I studied a lot about the mystics, and as soon as I got to their belief about the heart of hearts, so that the divinity there's only two entities in, you know, that are allowed in there, and that is God, your creator, and you in that heart of hearts. I got to tell you, my family thought I was nuts because ran around the house. Oh, my God, it's the heart of hearts. I know exactly.
Right, exactly.
It was one of those things.
Yeah.
But I think I entered that, and I realized that that breath, like you just said, that breath, you know, we're only here because God breathed life into us, you know?
Sure.
I mean, we are his very thoughts, and without that thought of us, we wouldn't exist, and our breath is his breath, and I think they were all combined together. I know that sounds odd, and but that's what I really believe. And you know, you let go of ego, and once that ego is gone, you become that pure conscious being that you're supposed to be.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly, and again, and I don't mean to keep, you know, harping on this thing, but if you read all the people who are measuring, you know, in the Heart Brain Coherence Institute, Heart Math Institute and all that, and you measure all of this and you read all of this information, that's exactly what it is, that higher level, as they say. And again, it sounds like metaphysical mumbo-jumbo, but it is a higher level of consciousness that's measured, actually measured in laboratories, watching brain functions, watching things happen, and things like that. So I guess
I'll tell you something interesting with the shared death experience.
Yeah.
The shared death experience all by itself is becoming vitally important to research into the near-death experience, because we do not fit into the mold, into that medical model of why these things happen.
Yes.
You know, they've always said, okay, maybe you have some type of a brain aneurysm, or maybe you have some type of left brain, you know, epilepsy, or whatever they want to get. We don't fit into that.
Yes, yes.
So they are using the shared death experiences to take a second look at the phenomenon of the near-death experience.
Right. Wow. Exactly. That's what you're doing. That's exactly what you're doing. And by the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest is Dr. Sharon Prentice. Her latest book is Becoming Starlight. It's a shared death journey from darkness to light, surviving grief and mending the wounds of loss. And I do give your book, I give your previous book as well, the first Becoming Starlight, to a lot of my patients who are, you know, sort of trying to figure things out and going through grief and trying to figure out, and because you explain and, you know, you really help people through this process as a doctor, you know, just unravel what's going on and give them a lot of peace, and you share these experiences with their families as well. So bless your heart for doing that.
Thank you for that, Michelle. I really do. And my goal in all of this is if I can take away even a small amount of the fear. Because, you know, most people are, when you think about death, I separate out into two different journeys. One is the process of dying.
Yes.
And the other is the actual death. And and people, they don't know the difference, you know, in that. They look at it as one process.
Sure.
And it's actually not. So if I can bring some peace to that.
Yes.
And lessen the fear.
Yes.
It makes it better for everybody.
So can you talk a little bit more about that difference and what you perceive that's really happening? You know, because I mean, everybody's afraid and everybody's in the room and the whole family.
Everybody's afraid. And you know, let me just give you a for instance here. One of my last patients, I just loved her, and we tried so hard. We actually kept her cancer at bay for 3 years until it came back.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came back, people are afraid to talk.
Yes.
Okay? People are afraid to open their mouths and talk about what's going on because they think, well, I don't know enough. And I tell people, you know what, you don't need to be the smartest in the room, you need to be the loudest.
Yeah.
Just to get the conversation going.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And once you get the conversation going, especially during the process, the important thing for people to understand is that now I'm not talking about sudden death here, okay?
Right.
But this is when we have a process of a terminal illness or something like that, or you know, an accident that has really taken its toll on someone. One of the things that causes so much fear and grief is that people don't talk about it because they think if they say something, it's going to be the wrong thing to say.
Yes.
Now, the first things out of someone's mouth when they're talking probably is the wrong thing to say, okay? Because
right.
people don't know.
Well, sure.
But when you're being honest with each other and loving with each other, to start the conversation with, I'm scared.
Yes.
I'm scared. I don't know what to say here. What
yes.
can I say? What can I do? Where mm-hmm. can I go with this conversation? So mm-hmm. the first thing is to get people talking about mm-hmm. how they feel. And, you know, you would be amazed.
Yes.
At what comes out of people's mouths, you
yes.
know, even just saying, I'm scared.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
And somebody telling a joke. I mean, it's all a process
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
getting in there to reach the love. That's the first thing.
Hmm.
It really is.
Yes.
And this process needs to come out of the dark shadows.
Yes.
It really does. Because
it does.
People just stand there and they freeze up.
Right.
I can't say this, I can't say that.
Yes.
And then you know what happens?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
right.
when the if-onlys and the coulda, woulda, shouldas
there you go.
Come in.
That's
and
the guilt.
People live with that forever.
Yeah.
And
that's they sure
not,
do.
That's yeah. not a good thing, you know?
No, no. And you know, when they read your book and they get this kind of information, they'll hopefully understand the natural process and that it's okay. Please don't beat it up on yourself. Please don't, you know, that don't say I should have at the time or in my past even. You know, I should have been
right.
a more loving child. I should have been a more loving wife or husband. And no, you know, this is your lesson, perhaps, to understand that we all need to always love and appreciate and try to make the best of our relationships so we don't
you
go
know,
through
but we
this.
All go, we all go
yeah,
through that, Michelle,
exactly.
every one of us. I mean,
sure.
every single one of us. I still do that to myself, too, the coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I tell people is they really need to understand, and I learned this from
right.
my book, and I don't mean to chuckle, but
sure.
if I hadn't have had this experience, then I wouldn't have known it either.
Right, right.
When someone leaves this physical plane, they leave it. And all of the things that we stress about and think, oh my gosh, I should have done this, I should have said that.
Right.
No, 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 no. Because the forgiveness, it's not even forgiveness. It's, I loved you. You loved me.
Yes.
There's nothing else, and we beat ourselves up year after year after year with the why wasn't I kinder? Why wasn't I more gentle? I should have done this. I should have done that. And if they, you know, were to come back and talk to us, they'd say, will you stop it already? Don't do this to yourself. I'm
right.
fine. I'm wonderful. I'm great.
Yes.
Look what you're doing. You're making
yeah.
me feel bad.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. I don't think that's so true. I don't think I've ever asked you this before, and just don't mean to put you on the spot and everything. But
that's okay.
I know you roll with everything. You're so cool. I've had many people come to me and tell me about having certain experiences that they interpret, and maybe we're all looking for signs after our loved ones have passed. But I've
mm-hmm.
had a couple of girlfriends who have actually. And they're real folks. They're not going to BS
right.
or anything like said, oh
right.
my gosh. I saw my mom in full translucent sitting on the edge of my bed last evening, and she looked very worried about me, and she had some physical issues going on.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to go into the hospital, and it freaked her out because it was almost like, what was that about? Why did my mom come to me? And another friend of mine was really trying to get pregnant for a long time. Her father had passed. She was very close to him. And she was walking, just kind of walking down the hall in her house. And
right.
she felt him, turned around and saw this kind of, again, this translucent, just like you saw your husband, this translucent
mm-hmm.
kind of, she didn't know if it was in her head or if it seemed very real to her, but she said he looked at me with a big smile, and his essence was, don't worry about it. And she got pregnant later that year.
Yeah.
So what is this? You said that these entities, our loved ones, leave, and they're pretty much cool with everything because they're in the light now. But
they are.
Are they coming? Is it hard for them, do you suppose, to come back and sort of give us these
no.
messages? Or are
no.
we communicating
no.
with them?
I think it's... I actually think it's very easy for them. It's hard for us.
Ah, okay.
Okay, it's hard for us. And for your friend to say, is it in my head? Of course it's in her head.
Yeah.
Of course it's in her head.
Sure.
Who is to say You know, we know so little about the human brain. We really do. I mean, you know, every day we're finding new things. And here's the thing. We are pure energy. We are consciousness. We are always connected to those people. I mean, seriously. And they, you know, this is not spooky stuff here, but when I'm going to say they watch us, people get all freaked out when I say they watch us. But they love us, and we are always connected. It's us. It is us. It is our humanity. It is that human condition that stops us from being able to get to them as much as they want to get to us. So we're the ones that stop it. And like I said earlier, I honestly believe that if you were to have an auditorium full of people, there's not one person in there who has not had some type of experience. Like I said, it's just a matter of degree.
Right. Exactly. That's true. I mean, we hear these little things from people, and well, I had this weird thing when I was 7 years old. You know, it's
absolutely.
Like my mom and dad told me.
And,
it was,
and we are not. Here's the thing. We're not allowed to talk about it.
Right. Right.
We're not. And if you do talk about it, oh my gosh, we need
she's
to take her to
crazy.
The doctor.
That's right.
There's something wrong.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
So it's once I think we open up the dialogue on death and the spiritual nature and the nature of pure consciousness, then the entire conversation changes.
It sure does. It really does. Can you now that we've kind of listened to your journey and really are getting into here the book Becoming Starlight, Surviving Grief and Mending the Wounds of Loss. What advice would you give to listeners in terms of, you know, coping with the loss of their loved ones or the fear of their own passing?
Coping with the grief of losing someone, here's what I say, and this sounds just almost trite. Do it your own way. We are told how to grieve. We are told you're not done. Oh my gosh, that happened such a long time ago, and you should be over that now, right?
Right, right.
I have been with people, family members, for years afterwards, and people do what other people want them to do, and that will just root you in the grief, because you've got to do it your way. And I got to tell you, I don't care if that means sobbing and laying on the floor, kicking and screaming. It means going to a movie, or like me. You know what I was doing the day after my husband died? I took my son bike riding.
Wow. Wow.
I did. My mother-in-law was looking at me like, okay.
Yes, exactly.
And everyone in the entire city knew what happened because of what, you know, Steve was to so many people. And they had, I mean, we were Southern Baptists at the time, so you know what that's like.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I left everything to my parents and my in-laws, and I took my little one bike riding because I wasn't afraid anymore, because I knew where he was. I knew that he was with my daughter, and I knew they were healthy and happy and wonderful, and then I knew I would see them again. But, you know, I did it my way. If I had done what everyone wanted me to do, I would have clothed myself in black and put on the black veil and you know, been in mourning for 10 years.
Right, and beating yourself up.
But that wasn't my way. And I see family members having to do it different ways. Some people want to go out and have a party. Some people go out and get drunk. Some people, I mean, and whatever it is you need to do. And the second biggest thing I tell people, please do not feel the need to entertain anyone, because people will come, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for your loss. And what do we say? Oh, it's okay. Instead of saying, it sucks. It's not okay. Okay, but we try to be, we
gracious.
Have to entertain people. It's okay, you know, and, and that just, it drives me insane. So
me
I tell people, you don't want to see anybody, you don't have to see them.
That's right.
You want to lock yourself in a room, lock yourself in a room. You want to go out to a bar, get drunk, do it.
I mean, you know what
I'm saying.
Exactly.
People have to do it themselves,
because
otherwise, you're going to be rooted in that grief. And then, of course, the closure thing is a whole new ballgame. And I don't know that we even have time to talk about that, but I tell everyone, please, 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 please stop looking for closure, because it doesn't exist. And that is the very thing that will keep you grounded in the thing that you're trying to get rid of.
Exactly. No, it's really true, because you're always looking, and you're always, and you're putting out that energy of how can I, you know, and you're not going to get that with a desperate energy within yourself. You
That's
know?
Right. And, absolutely.
And I think
you're
answering so many of these wonderful questions. One of the most common things now from that I'm getting from all the Gmails.
Oh boy, here we go.
Let's look at it. Because of my religious upbringing, I have a lot of fears.
Mm-hmm.
Please tell me. And
oh,
I think
man.
You've already said this. I think you've already explained this, but let's just get it. Should I be
Michelle,
afraid?
Michelle, this question, I don't mean to over-talk you,
no,
but oh, Lord,
please.
Have mercy. Let me tell you something. Mm. My whole entire life was spent in the church.
Yes.
It was.
Yep.
And I was told from the time I was old enough to understand English that God was this man that lived outside of me, you know, looked like Charlton Heston from the Ten Commandments. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
With
sure.
the long beard and,
yeah,
you know, all of
there
that stuff.
There you go.
And that he was watching my every move, and that if I did anything wrong, if I said anything wrong, if I turned left instead of turning right, he was going to throw thunderbolts at me, and it was going to be over, okay?
Yes.
That God was this outside force, and I was just this little, you know, peon running around the earth.
Right.
Oh, heavens to Betsy. Let me tell you, that is so contrary to what I found. God... And I'm using the word God. People can call it universe, creator, whatever they want to.
Spiritual energy. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Whatever they want to call it. Mm-hmm. God is this amazing life force that created you. Yes. And God is not separate from you any more than you are separate from him. Mm-hmm. You are here because one day... I'm putting this in terms that we can all understand now.
Yes,
when I say one day, what is one day to all creation?
Sure.
God thought, you know what? This is how I want to express me in the world. Bam, there's Michelle.
Yep.
And then the next thought is, oh, but you know what? I gave Michelle all of this, so now I need to show all of this. Boom, there's Sharon.
Right, right.
And we are his expression in this world. One of my mentors, my... Darling, darling friend, Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Oh,
he
God,
used to say stuff like that all the time.
Yes, he did.
And
you're right.
He did. And in the beginning, I didn't understand. I'd be like, what are you talking about? When he would talk about the I Am Chronicles, you know?
Right, sure.
But here's what I say about fear.
Mm-hmm.
It is shoved into our throats, shoved down our throats
right.
in
sure.
organized religion. It really is. And finding out that you are so... incredibly loved. And, you know, one of the big things that I discovered when you talk about heaven and hell, people think heaven is this place and hell is this place. You want to know what hell is to me? You want to know what hell is to me?
Mm-hmm.
Hell is any place where God is not.
Mm.
But
yes.
there's a twist to that.
Mm-hmm.
There is no place that God is not.
Right. So do we create our own hell in our minds because of old fear or dogma? Is that what you're saying?
I believe that, I'm going to use the word if. Mm-hmm. If there is a hell, hell to me would be anywhere where I am not in the presence of God.
Mm.
You know, in the Bible, if you want to go spiritual here, I mean, if you want to go biblical here for a minute, you know, God looked around and everything was good.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Everything was good. God don't make no crap, okay? Why would
I love
an
you.
All-loving, I mean, seriously, why would an all-loving, peaceful, I can't tell you what the love is like.
Mm.
Why on earth would he send his own thought and his own breath to, use the word burn, in some eternal fire somewhere? It
no,
makes
true.
No sense.
It doesn't.
That
it,
I believe, Michelle, I honestly believe, and I will go to my death believing.
Yes.
That was the control factor from the organized church.
Mm-hmm.
They had to control people enough. I know people are going to get mad at me for saying this. They always do, but I've said it for years. And hey, I can take the heat. I've taken a lot of it. So, you know, try not to be afraid. Whoever your listener is that wrote this, realize that God lives in you and you live in him.
Mm.
Okay. In that heart of hearts, you are part and parcel.
Right.
Of that very thought of God.
That's beautifully said. Thank you so much. And as always, Sharon, time's up almost. So isn't that great how time flies with us when we get into these discussions?
I know.
By the way, guys.
But
the
there's so much more.
Oh,
there's
my
so much
God.
More.
Well, you got to come back soon because you're requested a lot. So there you go.
Oh,
so I'd love
you're
to
very
have
sweet.
You on.
Thank
it's
you.
True. So the book is called Becoming Starlight, Surviving Grief and Mending the Wounds of Loss. Dr. Sharon Prentice, you're amazing, psychotherapist, spiritual counselor, and you focus on helping patients process the grief of losing a loved one. And, of course, this book is about Sharon's memoir of healing from the devastating loss of her daughter and husband, and it's a beautiful, not depressing, beautiful, inspiring book. It is. I'm telling you guys. I'm telling you.
I know,
you, this
but
is,
it's funny that you said that. And the reason I'm laughing is because one of the people I got an email from said to me, why did you not go jump off a bridge when this was happening?
Right, exactly. You're going, well, no, this is a good inspired. This is inspirational reading, folks. So what's the best way folks can get a hold of your book and find out more about you, Sharon? What would be that?
Oh, my gosh. You can go to my website, www.sharonprentice.com. You can go to Amazon. You can
Perfect.
Go to Barnes & Noble, the indie
Love
sites.
It.
The where if you want it, you can find it.
Great. Oh, Sharon, you're the best. Thank you so much for being on the couch again. It's great to have you,
I
as
love
always.
It.
Good.
I like talking to you. You're right there with me. You don't
I am.
Think I'm, you know, nuts. You understand everything, and that this is, it's really wonderful to talk to someone who gets it.
Oh, thank you so much. You too. We're very same. Very, very much same in our belief system, so. Thanks again, and we'll talk soon. Please come back on the
yes,
show.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, super. All right, Sharon. Have a beautiful day.
Yes, you too, Michelle.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. All right, that's, again, Dr. Sharon Prentice. She's amazing. And the book, Becoming Starlight. It'll help you through your grief. She's the real deal. She's studied many, many different metaphysical and scientific concepts behind the near-death, share-death experiences, and just check it out. It's going to help you. All right, guys, thanks for being on the couch today, and as I always say, do take care of yourselves first, and then you'll be great for other people, and that's the way it works in the world. Have a good one. I'll be back next Friday with another inspiring guest. Bye-bye now.